Cool. Good morning. Hope you've had a good weekend so far. I am excited. It is funny when you haven't preached in a while, then everybody comments on me actually being neatly dressed. That's kind of when you know you've not been on stage in a while, because I normally come to church and jeans and different things, but this morning I had to dress up a little bit because I am speaking. So, you know what I believe is that women are the pinnacle of God's creation. If you read the creation story, God created everything else. He made the sky, He made the land, He made the sea, He made the creatures, He made fish. He created man on the sixth day, and as He looked at it, He thought, something is still missing from this picture. I am not done yet. Something is not quite right about this. And then He made woman. Woman is the apex of God's creation. Women are awesome. And you know, the amazing thing is God has, since the beginning of time until our day, He has used women in an incredible way to shape and direct and guide the course of history. And I'm so excited over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be doing a series on the great women of the Bible. And we're really going to dig into some incredible characters in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. And I think as we started discussing this at a staff level about this series, and as I've been starting to study and learn and read on different women, I just feel so inspired. There's so much that I believe we can learn from great women in the Bible and even in our fellowship today. And I think the thing that I love about doing character studies is you study it out, you see the human factor in people. See, as you study out these women, you see the great victories that they have, great things that they do for God, and then you see epic fails. And that encourages my heart as I look at them and I consider their life and I think, you know, that's a little bit like us. We have great victories. We do great things for God, and then we have our low moments. And yet God is always present through that whole time. And I pray, my hope for us as we do this series over the next couple of weeks is that you will feel inspired. Is that if you're a man in the congregation this morning, as you look at the women of the Bible, you will feel just a great sense of appreciation for your sisters in Christ. And I pray as you're a woman this morning as well, that you will feel moved and called higher as well in your faith, that we can study them and we can become like them as we look at their lives together. You know, great women doesn't necessarily mean sort of celebrity status. We're going to look at some women that are very well known and probably some that are lesser well known. And this morning I want to kick off with an amazing woman, a great woman in the Bible that's probably a little bit lesser known than the others. And her name is Abigail. Have a look in 1 Samuel chapter 25. 1 Samuel chapter 25. Just to bring you up to speed where we are right here is we're in the time of King Saul and David. And the role of the woman back then was a little bit different to the role the women play today in our society. And I want you to kind of embark with me on this mission. Her whole story, she gets mentioned a couple of times throughout the scriptures. But really, this is her story in 1 Samuel chapter 25. And I believe even in this chapter, it is so rich. And there are so many things that we can learn, but I want to ask you to come join me. As we start reading it, as we start digging into it, I want to ask you to put yourself on the scene, to live with Abigail with me as we go through it. And my prayer and hope is I think the insights that we're going to gather from it is just going to jump off the page at you. And I pray that we'll be able to leave you with some decisions that you can make to become more like her. Let's start here in verse 1. 1 Samuel chapter 25, verse 1. It says, now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him at his home in Ramah. Then David moved down into the desert of Mahon. A certain man in Mahon who had property there at Carmel was very wealthy. He had 1,000 goats and 3,000 sheep, which he was shearing at Carmel. His name was Nabal, and his wife's name was Abigail. She was an intelligent and a beautiful woman, but her husband, a Calebite, was a surly and mean in his dealings. Let's read till there. You know, we really get introduced to sort of three of the main characters throughout the story. The first one here is David. And at this point in time, David is a young man that really has a bright future ahead of him. At this point in time, quite recently before this, he was appointed to be the new king of Israel. But at this point in time, King Saul was still king, and he was unwilling to let go of the throne. So instead of pursuing Israel's enemies, he turned his whole army against David to find David and kill him because he didn't want to let go of the throne. So as we meet David right here, David is actually on the run, and he's been running for a while. And for a brief point in time, he settles in this place called Mahon, the desert of Mahon, which is very close to a place called Carmel that we might be more familiar with. You know, the other character that we get introduced to right here is Abigail. Now, as we go through the story, we're going to unpack a little bit more about her and who she was. But the Bible describes here that she was intelligent and she was beautiful. You know, in Hebrew, her name actually meant one who gives joy to her father. Now, Abigail was an exceptional young woman with great potential and probably great hopes for the future. And my guess is very much like any young woman in the fellowship today. She probably pondered questions about, what would I be when I grow up? You know, will I get married? Will I have kids? To whom will I get married? And I'm sure she was hoping that it would be a strapping young man, a handsome, strong, you know, intelligent young man like Xander. But I'm sure that was her hope. She wanted a guy that would adore her, that would love her for who she was. A guy that would honor God and be faithful. I guess that was her heart's desire. And yes, she did get married, but who was this man of her dreams? His name was Nabal. The Bible describes he was a very wealthy man. He had 1,000 goats and 3,000 sheep. And he had many shepherds and many people that served him and worked in the family business. Now, he would kind of be like an MD working for a big business organization today. Man, he was making big dollar. He was bringing home the bacon. You know, he was the guy that probably had a holiday house out in Hermanus. Nothing wrong with that. If you have one, I'll be very willing to use your place. But he's the guy with the holiday home in Hermanus. He's the guy driving the new BMW 3 Series. He's not the guy that drives a white Polo 1400 like me. That's not Nabal. Very, very rich. He was obviously a talented man, but he was a bully. Bible describes that he was surly and mean in his dealings with people. You know, the ESV, which is a more literal translation, actually says that he was harsh and badly behaved. The Holman translation says he was evil in his dealings. You know, Nabal was a man of whom his own servants and employees would say, he is such a wicked man that no one can talk to him. And later on in the story, you'll see his own wife, even though she loved him, referred to him as a wicked man. You know, as we get into the story, we'll learn more about him as well. But in Hebrew, his name actually meant fool, and he certainly lived up to it. So we kind of see this incredible mismatch, and we see it today as well, right? We see this rich, talented guy that is just harsh and mean and arrogant and self-centered, married to this incredible, intelligent, beautiful, faithful woman. Major mismatch. And we can only imagine, it doesn't really say, what it must have been like for Abigail to live with Nabal on a daily basis. There might have been some challenges, and yet that was the reality she had to face. Let's continue reading here in verse 4. It says, while David was in the desert, he heard that Nabal was shearing sheep. So he sent 10 young men and said to them, go up to Nabal at Carmel and meet him in my name. Say to him, long life to you, good health to you and your household, and good health to all that is yours. Now I hear that it is sheep shearing time. When your shepherds were with us, we did not ill treat them. And the whole time they were at Carmel, nothing of theirs was missing. Ask your own servants and they will tell you. Therefore, be favorable towards my young men. Since I come at a festive time, please give your servants and your son David whatever you can find for them. You know, just to put you a little bit on the scene here, sheep shearing was, and if you come from a farm, you probably know this, was sort of shaving off or cutting off of the sheep's wool. And back then, they probably had relatively primitive instruments. Today, they actually have machines that they do it with. And as I read up about this, they actually have sheep shearing competitions throughout the world. You know, they have some in South Africa and New Zealand. I'm sure Australia is probably world champs on that one as well when it comes to sheep shearing. But back then, sheep shearing was a very festive time if you were a shepherd. And it would typically happen about twice a year, because when the shearing was done, there would be like this massive celebratory event, this party that would be thrown for them. Almost be like a Christmas party or a year-end party that you and I would go to today. And at this time, David and his men was camping in the desert, really looking after Nabal's shepherds. Now, you might be asking yourself, the shepherd looks after the sheep. Why do you need someone to look after the shepherd? And in actual fact, back then, being a shepherd was a pretty dangerous job. I mean, if you were looking after the sheep, a lot of times there would be these bands of sort of thieves or robbers coming from neighboring countries, and they would sweep in your flock, beat the shepherd, grab the sheep, and run off. And if it wasn't the robbers or thieves they would grab and snatch your sheep, it would be wild animals like lions or bears or anything like that. So David and his men was rendering really a voluntary service to Nabal, looking after his shepherds and making sure that nothing goes missing. So, and now it's party time. It's celebration time. The hard work has been done. And David sent some of his young men to Nabal, saying to him, hey, we want in. We want to be part of the party. Now, today will be a little bit like a waiter or waitress that served you excellently at a restaurant, or a bellboy that carried your bags up into your hotel room, standing there waiting for a tip. So David and his men is really waiting for the tip of the service that they've rendered to Nabal. And it makes logical sense. This guy has 3,000 sheep. He has 1,000 goats. Surely he must have something to spare at this point in time. Let's see how this unfolds in verse 9. When David's men arrived, they gave Nabal this message in David's name, and then they waited. So they're standing there waiting for the tip. Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is this, David? Who is this son of Jesse? Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. Why should I take my bread and water and the meat that I have slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men coming from who knows where?" David's men turned around and went back. When they arrived, they reported every word. David said to his men, "Put on your swords." So they put on their swords and David put on his. About 400 men went up with David, while 200 stayed with the supplies. You know, we learn so much about Nabal in this passage. He doesn't just flat out refuse David. He doesn't just say to him, "Hey, look, I don't care." Later on in the story, when Nabal's servants sort of recount the story to Abigail, they actually say Nabal was hurling insults at his servants. David was enraged. When they brought back the message and told him exactly what Nabal said, man, he lost it. And he was bent on taking revenge against Nabal and his whole household. And I'm sure you've been there as well. When there's been times which, you know, normally you're logical, normally you think through situations, and then something happens where you cannot think straight. You get consumed with anger. And all you want to do is take revenge. That's where David was at this point in time. And he was about to do something that before his integrity and his trust in God did not allow him to do, and that was to take revenge. And Nabal and his household was about to get the full brunt of David and his fighting men's anger. But God had a plan, and in steps this amazing woman, Abigail. Have a look in verse 14. It says, "One of the servants told Nabal's wife, Abigail, 'David sent messages from the desert to give our master this greeting, but he hurled insults at them. Yet these men were very good to us. They did not ill-treat us. And the whole time we were out in the fields near them, nothing was missing. Night and day, they were like a wall around us all the time we were herding our sheep near them. Now think it over and see what you can do, because disaster is hanging over our master and his whole household. He is such a wicked man that no one can even talk to him.'" You know, one of Nabal's sort of servants come and report what happened, and basically says, "Because of your husband's actions, there is disaster waiting to happen right here." you know, Abigail found herself at a major crossroads in her life. It's kind of one of those moments where you can almost describe it as a defining moment for her and her household. And the sort of servants come to her and say, think it over and see what you can do. Now, let's have a look together here about what we can learn about how Abigail handles this situation. And what do we see in her character that we can walk away with this morning? Verse 18. It says, Abigail lost no time. She took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 dressed sheep. Now, I don't know what that looked like, whether they had little overalls on or something. But I take the Bible literally, so. 5 seahs of roasted grain, 100 cakes of raisin, and 200 cakes of pressed figs, and loaded them on donkeys. Then she told the servants, go ahead of me, I'll follow you. But she did not tell her husband, Nabal. You know, first thing that just kind of jumps out at me here, in verse 18 it says that Abigail lost no time. She realized there was no time to lose. She understood the urgency of the matter. And she made a decision to do something about it. She didn't just sit around passively hoping that maybe somehow someone out there would do it. She was active. You know, the Message translation of this, I love it. It says she flew into action. Now, my previous flatmate, he's a great friend of mine, man, Jeremy. We lived together just up the road here for about a year and a half. Now, funny thing about Jerry is he's got all these little sayings and sentences. I don't know where he comes up with them, but one of them would be like a brander breek net een keer, like a wave only crashes once. So I think what he's trying to imply is you've got to make most of every opportunity. Then we had this other one where a guy came from California and sort of introduced us to the saying of, don't be a victim, tiger up. And we used to say that to one another in the morning. You know, our alarm would go off or it'd just be a bad day and he'd be like, don't be a victim, man, just tiger up. And he actually wrote in a permanent marker on our toaster, which now I can't get it off. So every morning I wake up, I see Jerry's writing, don't be a victim, tiger up. So he's still kind of a silent flatmate for me. But he had this one saying of being an action Jackson. An action Jackson. That's even if you say that 10 times over, I'm going to get stuck on that. Action Jackson. Now what an action Jackson was, it's someone that doesn't sit around waiting for something to happen. It's someone that makes stuff happen. It's someone that takes initiative. It's someone that looks to a certain situation and thinks, something must be done right here, and I'm going to step up, and I'm going to step out, and I'm going to do something about this. That's an action Jackson. Now, Abigail was an action Jackson. She was an action Jackson. Now, I realize there's some of us in the fellowship right here, maybe you have a little bit more gray hair, and you're feeling very uncomfortable at this point in time. Well, how can the guy use such a colloquial slang word from the pulpit? That's okay. That's okay. We're a multi-generational church. So if you don't like the action Jackson, just replace with any synonym that works for you. But I think you get my point. She was active. She made a decision. I'm going to step out. I'm going to do something. I'm not just going to sit around waiting passively. Here's the question that I'm faced with if I look at Abigail's life. Am I an action Jackson? If it comes to spiritual matters for you, are you an action Jackson? When you see a brother and sister, either in your small group, your Bible talk, or just even in the fellowship, and you can see them go down a road that they should not be going down, where you can see they are busy slipping away from God's kingdom, they are making compromising decisions that's going to be hurting their faith in the long run, do you feel enough to say, I'm going to be the action Jackson here? I'm going to do something. I'm not just going to sit around. I'm going to lose no time. I'm going to step up and step in. Help them out. Or when you see the lost, either work colleagues or family members or, you know, people that you know, as you look at their lives, they are far from God. You know that they're stuck in sin. They're enslaved by sin. Do you feel enough to say, I'm going to be an action Jackson? I'm going to do something. Or maybe when you see the plight of the poor around you, when, man, you can see there are people that are destitute, that are hungry, that are hurt. You know, do you feel enough to say, I'll do something. I'm not going to lose time. I'm not just going to sit around waiting for someone else to do it. I'll do it. I'll be the man. I'll be the woman. But Abigail was an action Jackson. I believe that's something that we can take from her. Have a look in verse 20. It says, as she came riding her donkey into a mountain ravine, there were David and his men descending towards her, and she met them. David had just said, it's been useless, all my watching over this fellow's property in the desert, so that nothing of his was missing. He has paid me back evil for good. May God deal with David, be it ever so severely, if by morning I leave alive one male of all who belong to him. When Abigail saw David, she quickly got off her donkey, bowed down before David with her face to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, my Lord, let the blame be on me alone. Please let your servant speak to you. Hear what your servant has to say. May the Lord pay no attention to that wicked man Nabal. He is just like his name. His name is fool and folly goes with him. But as for me, your servant, I do not see the man my master sent. Now, since the Lord has kept you, my master, from bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hands, and surely as the Lord lives, as you live, may your enemies and all who intend to harm my master be like Nabal. And let this gift, which your servant has brought to my master, be given to the men who follow you. Now, I want you to kind of put yourself in her shoes here for a moment. I mean, it's just, it's incredible how she responds in this situation. I mean, picture this. Picture being Abigail living with Nabal day in and day out. Picture what that must have been like. A brute man, arrogant, self-centered, evil, rude. Picture what that must have been like for her to be in that marriage, in that relationship. And also even right here, picture this situation. She's coming down the ravine, down the mountain ravine, probably praying or just having thoughts running through her mind. And all of a sudden she meets David and 400 fighting men in front of her. I mean, that's a gloomy picture. That's a difficult life situation to be in right there on a daily basis, but what she's facing right here. And my guess is she could have responded a number of different ways. I would have been tempted to. She could have chosen to be discouraged. Say, you know what? I just give up. I'm just too discouraged to do anything. She probably could have said or thought, none of this was my doing. I mean, I'm not responsible here. Why did God allow this to happen? I don't deserve this. She could have blamed her parents, saying, man, it's my parents that arranged this marriage with this Nabal guy for me, and I'm stuck with him, and he's ruined my life. I had all these hopes, all these dreams, all this potential for my life, and I'm stuck in this situation. She could have blamed others for why she was there. She could have chosen to be bitter and take revenge. You know, when this situation came around, she could have been tempted to think, well, maybe this is my way out. I'm going to allow life to run its course, and maybe he can set me free from this evil man, and then I'll be truly happy. Those might have been all temptations that might have run through her heart and her mind. But you know, she doesn't respond that way, even though she could have. Amazing thing about how she responds is she remains faithful regardless of the circumstances. She steps in to plead for her husband. She rides out on the donkey, falls down on her face in front of David and says, let the blame be on me alone. I know my husband is a wicked man. I know he probably deserved what's coming his way. But let the blame be on me. You know, she was faithful, regardless of the circumstances. She stepped out in faith, approached David and said, Maybe if I just do this, maybe if I just have this conversation with him, maybe he'll relent. Maybe God would do something right here. She was filled with faith and she remained faithful regardless of the circumstances. You know, this is so challenging for me. You know, it is incredibly easy for me to be faithful when the cards dealt to me is good cards. When stuff goes my way, when things are easy, man, it's easy to be faithful. It's easy to be content. It's easy to be at peace. It's easy to believe God can do anything when the card stacked on my life table is good. know, when the cards stacked on my life table is not what I envisioned or is not the cards that I wanted, then it becomes incredibly hard to remain faithful. It gets very, very challenging. And I'm often tempted to think, if this could happen, or if that could happen, if this could happen, then I'll be happy. Then I'll be content. Then I'll be at peace. Almost want the situation just to go away. God, take the situation away from me, and then I'll be faithful. But that wasn't Abigail's response. She was faithful regardless of the cards that she was dealt. And you and I have all been there, right? We understand this reality where, you know, life doesn't always turn out the way that we hoped it would. It really doesn't. We had hopes and we had dreams for the future, and then just things happen. Things come in the way. And sometimes it's because of our choices, personal choice that we've made. Other times it's because of the choices, like in this case for Abigail, it was the choices of her husband that he made that impacted her. And sometimes it's just life. We don't know why it happens. But we all face that. We all face these difficult life situations. And Abigail made a decision to remain faithful regardless of her circumstance. And I believe that's a decision that you and I need to make as we look at her life. And that we can imitate her. Let's carry on reading here in verse 28. It says, please forgive. So she's still in this conversation with Nabal, with David. It says, please forgive your servant's offense, for the Lord will certainly make a lasting dynasty for my master, because he fights the Lord's battles. Let no wrongdoing be found in you as long as you live. Even though someone is pursuing you, she's talking about Saul, to take your life, the life of my master will be bound securely in the bundle of the living by the Lord your God. But the lives of your enemies he will hurl away as from the pocket of a sling. Probably referring to Goliath. There, when the Lord has done for my master every good thing he promised concerning him and has appointed him leader over Israel, my master will not have on his conscience the staggering burden of needless bloodshed or having avenged himself. And when the Lord has brought my master success, remember your servant. I mean, again, it's amazing. The last observation I want to make here about Abigail is Abigail reminded David that God is sovereign. She reminded him over and over again. David was about to take matters into his own hands. He was about to just avenge himself on Nabal and his household. And Abigail steps in and says, no, no, no. God is sovereign. God can be trusted. Don't take matters into your own hands. Don't do this. Wait on God. Trust in God. And she does this a number of times by saying things like, the Lord will certainly make a lasting dynasty for my master because my master fights the Lord's battles. David, you've got a great future ahead of you. Trust God. Even though you've been running from your life of Saul, my master will be bound securely in the bundle of the living by the Lord your God. God has taken care of you, David. Remember how Saul has been pursuing you and how he's been marching against you, wanted to kill you. God has been looking after you. God is sovereign. He's been there all along. It says, the Lord will do for my master every good thing that he promised. David, remember God's promises. Remember that he appointed you king and he anointed you over Israel. God will deliver on that promise. God is sovereign. And the Lord will bring my master success. What she ends up with. That's amazing. Over and over again, she reminds him, God is sovereign. God is in control. Don't take matters into your own hands. Don't take revenge. Trust God. Wait on God. He will bring the delivery. Don't you and I need Abigail's in our lives in order to remind us that God is sovereign? We need women and we need men in our lives that reminds us constantly of this. I know for me, even preparing for the sermon, my girlfriend Laura is so amazing. I mean, I haven't preached in a while, so, you know, I sort of get anxious and fret, and how's it going to go? I really hope it goes well, and she'll just say, hey, it's going to be awesome. God can be trusted. And, you know, that does wonders for my heart. Well, okay, amen. I get it. You know, I see the perspective. But we need men and women to do that for us continually through our lives. You know, before I became a disciple, I was big into hip-hop music. Now again, I'm sure there's some of you that feel really uncomfortable with knowing that fact. But I turned out okay. In case, I was the guy, I had loose pants, boxers sticking out. I don't know if you've seen that. Boxers sticking out. You know, I'd go to hip-hop parties, hip-hop DJs and sort of graffiti artists and different things. I know it's tough to believe. I mean, this morning I'm standing here with a tucked-in shirt, speaking to an audience of adults. I mean, God has a sense of humor. And I think my parents actually prefer it this way. I think they're happy things have turned out. Anyways, in kind of gangster language, on the hip-hop subculture, there's a little line that says, I got this. Now, you gotta do the hands as well. You know, he says, I got this, man. Right, you catch my drift. Now, normally how you would use this sentence is I want you to imagine like a big older brother. He's muscular, big biceps, man. The guy's fearless. And he's got a younger brother, scrawny, skinny guy. And the younger brother comes to the older brother and says, tugs in his shirt, says, man, I don't know, these kids are making trouble with me and they're calling me names. I don't know what to do. And you can kind of see the older brother saying, bro, don't worry, I got this. That's how they would use it, right? Now, the Urban Dictionary, and if you didn't believe there is an Urban Dictionary, there is actually one, defines, I got this, as an expression that is short for, I got this covered. I got this handled. I got this under control. That's what I got this means. I believe we got to be the older brother that says, God has got this. God has got this, man. I believe we need to be that older brother. When people come to us and they're anxious and they're fearful and they're stressed out, we're going to say, God has got this. You can do the hands. That's fine. You can roll with it a bit. God has got this. It's okay. We need husbands and wives. We need husbands to step into the gap and say to their wives, God has got this. Don't worry. We need wives to say to the husbands, God has got this. We need friends to tell us that. God has got this. He's got it under control. He's got it waxed. He's got it handled. That's my God. God has got this. We need it. We need Abigails in our lives to remind us that God is sovereign. Yes, we need to be Acts and Jacksons, but we've got to lean into God. We've got to remind one another that don't take matters into your own hands. God has got this. Let's close out here. We're not going to read it. We don't have time. You know, in the end, Abigail successfully convinces David, and David relents from his fierce anger and decided to trust God once again and not to take revenge on Nabal and his household. And it's kind of a funny turn of events, but Nabal actually, a while after that, passes away, and David ends up taking the widowed Abigail as his wife. It's an amazing turn of events how she ends up with a man after God's own heart, because she trusted God and she was faithful. Now, let me leave you this. I know there's so much we can learn from this, but let me leave you with this. Abigail faced many crossroads in her life. We can only imagine what it must have been like to live with Nabal on a daily basis. There must have been a daily crossroads for her where she had to make choices to respond to him in a certain way. And right here, again, because of the actions of Nabal, she faced a major crossroads in her life. And I believe as Abigail faced crossroads, you and I will face crossroads in our lives. You and I will be dealt difficult life situations as we go through this life and as time sort of rolls by in the years to come and in the months to come. I believe two things happen when we face a crossroads. There are two things that take place for Abigail and for us. Number one, we arrived at a difficult life situation at different crossroads. Choices that we make during that time and how we handle it often affects and determines the rest of our lives. You know, if Abigail didn't make a decision or a choice to be an Action Jackson, or to be faithful regardless of her circumstances, or to remind David that God is faithful, there would have been dire consequences for her. For her, for her husband and household, and I believe for Israel as well. David was allowed to take revenge on this man, Nabal. But that's what happens at a crossroads. The choices that you and I make during that difficult life situation really shapes us and determines our life going forward. The second thing that happens when we come to a crossroads, difficult life situation, it really exposes what is hidden inside of us already. Who we truly are comes out. And my hope for us, you can clearly see it with Abigail. You see with Abigail that her character was formed on a daily basis, that when that crossroads came, when that incredible, difficult life situation came, she had the character to deal with the reality that she was faced with. Brothers and sisters, church, my hope for us is as we reflect on Abigail, as we do this series on great women in the Bible, I pray that we can be inspired. I pray that we can be moved. I pray as well, if we get to those crossroads, that we can keep in mind that, man, how I handle this situation will determine and affect the rest of my life. And then on a daily basis, we will make decisions to imitate and emulate Abigail's character, that we will build character, that when those times come, it will be completely clear to everybody and it will be exposed just who we are. We will trust God that we will be faithful regardless of the situation. Amen.